Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On, Gays in Science Fiction. For more information and news we talk about in the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com.
Hey!
Hello, my geek friends!
Hello.
So wait a second. Is it alternate?
It's been a while since I've been on Geeks On.
Is it alternate lifestyle first, gays second? Or gay first, alternate lifestyle second.
I don't even know what that lifestyle means. Is a pretty broad category. I mean,
meaning your geek love.
Meaning your geek love?
Which comes first?
Oh, which takes ranking?
Which takes ranking first?
I don't know.
Going to the gay mart.
That's part of tonight's conversation.
All right. I'll leave it.
Do geeks look at gays as a separate breed? Do gays look at geeks as a separate breed?
I'll leave that.
We'll get back.
I didn't even understand the question. Well, alternative lifestyle and gay means the same thing to me.
You're going to have to get on the page by the time we're talking about this.
All right.
I'm just saying.
Well, everybody.
How have you been?
I have been good.
I've been very good. How you been, Don?
I've been excellent.
You will notice that Peter is in absentia because he had twins.
Twins!
Yes.
You wouldn't believe the labor he had to go through in order to push those out.
Yes, it was terrible. Yeah.
All the tearing sounds of the screaming.
Two more geeks.
Yes, and strangely, they are named Jack and Kate.
Yeah, you know.
Okay, I went when I heard they had twins. I said, "Hey, Luke and Leia."
Right.
And she's like, "No, that's absurd. And then they said,
"This
no,
is
no,
Trace.
No.
Tracy, who said,
yeah,
that's absurd. That's absurd."
And then somebody says, "Oh, it's going to be Jack and Kate." I went, "You mean from Lost? How is that any less absurd?"
Because they didn't mean it that way.
Well, the argument, yeah.
Sure.
But the argument is that, you know, in 20 years, people are still going to be talking about Star Wars. But Lost, probably not so much.
That's what someone else told me, yeah.
Yeah. And Leia is very unusual, whereas Kate, you know, just cooler. There are more Catherines in the world.
And depending, like, what sort of nicknames they pick up along the way, so if it's, like, Jacko and Katie, then, you know, it's going to be a little different.
Yeah. Then Leia and you're a loser.
Wow.
What? Luke?
Yeah.
He's one of the apostles, Matt.
Okay.
You take that back before lightning.
By Flash.
The Flash bolt of lightning.
Yeah, but that's why Peter ain't here.
Okay.
Yes. So what you guys been doing in your geek weeks?
Oh, my Lord. I don't know.
Well, we're going to have the next episode's going to be a huge catch-up episode.
Right.
And we're going to talk. I'm going to talk about a couple things just in the news segment, just because. But, I mean, there's so much to talk about. There's so many TV shows that I've watched. Movies, the rest of the summer movies.
Yes.
I played a gazillion new board games. I played a gazillion new video games. So, you know.
I've just been Halo addicted.
Well, that's one thing I want to talk about in the news.
Okay, we'll talk about it next week. But, that being said, I can finally talk about it. The Hub has launched.
Yay!
10-10-10, yesterday, actually.
Is this the Hub headed up by our Geeks On friend, Ted Biaselli?
It is the Hub headed up by our Geeks On friend, Ted Biaselli.
And what is the Hub?
The Hub is now taking over for Discovery Kids. It is a combination of Hasbro and Discovery. And basically, they're hosting all sorts of new shows. They're doing the old G.I. Joe. They're doing the new G.I. Joe, which I am on. And I can finally say I am playing the character of Tunnel Rat, as well
Yay!
As a bunch of other ones. You can also see, Clancy Brown, Charlie Adler, Kevin Michael Richardson. Clancy Brown was the Kurgan in Highlander.
Mm.
What's his nuts from... he was Rorschach in...
I can never remember his name.
Yes. It's like Arlie Ermey, but it's not. I can never remember his name. Anyway, there are all sorts of people. A lot of the cast of Lost ended up on the show.
Mm.
They're trying to star-stud it for the first 26 episodes.
It's an all-star G.I. Joe.
It's an all-star G.I. Joe, and it's really, really cool. Jason Marsden's on it.
Why else do you think that Matt Yang King would consent to lend his name to such a project?
I thought maybe it just might have been a one-star, but you were saying it's packed with
stars. It is packed, and I am playing... a Chinese Jew. A Chinese Brooklynese Jew.
Nice.
So if you like listening to Matt on that cartoon, maybe you want to write in and mention how much you like that particular character.
That would be helpful.
Voiced by, what was the name of that character, Matt?
Tunnel Rat. That would be helpful.
What's your real name, though? That's your code name.
Nikki Lee. Nikki Lee is the actual.
Was there actually a male Chinese or a male Asian character in the original?
Yeah, he was. Nikki Lee is actually. I mean, they took it straight from canon. I don't know whether it's canon from the comic, because the tunnel rat that I remember as the action figure was, ref back to our episode, awfully gay.
Yeah,
he was almost as bad as Shipwreck, but not quite.
Shipwreck
was another Shipwreck.
The sailor, tiny little sailor hat, parrot on the shoulder, open shirt down to about five.
Sort of
buttons.
Appropriate for our gays in sci-fi episode.
Him and Gung Ho.
They were close.
They were converting.
They were very close.
They were definitely converting. But Transformers is also on the network. They're bringing back Fraggle Rock.
The original
Fraggle Rock is going to be back on. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, there's the Strawberry Shortcake got an update. It's a little.
I saw pictures of the new Strawberry Shortcake.
They all
it's
like
not
angular.
Right.
It's a little odd. She's a little. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how I feel about it.
Pretty tweaked.
And then My Little Pony looks like Powerpuff Girls.
Doesn't surprise me. Yeah. That seems like the natural evolution.
Exactly.
But the new Strawberry Shortcake, not to beat a dead horse to death, but it reminds me. She is to Strawberry Shortcake what Lunatics was to Mary Melodies.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just not right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what Strawberry Shortcake looked like? She was sort of homely with the redhead, with the big freckles and everything.
Now she's like hot.
Now she's hot. Hmm. Well, she's hot if she was a 9-year-old. So, I mean, I suppose I shouldn't say hot.
Wow.
Exactly. So
I feel uncomfortable.
Letter should go to Matt Yang King.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes, matt@geekson.com.
Yeah, exactly.
Not any of the other ones, please.
No.
At work, my life has been swallowed by studying social games on Facebook. They've had me designing
social apps. Is that
why I
keep getting... are you collecting points by using me?
Yes, pretty much. It's a fascinating new style of gaming that basically forces you to whore out your friends and beg them to play the game for you.
Farmville, I don't get.
Well, no, okay. I'm getting these games now.
You understand it or you like them?
No, I understand them.
Okay, because there's a big difference.
Breed of games. I don't know if it's a new. In fact, I almost feel like World of Warcraft falls under this. There's this type of gameplay which is... fastidiously performing little actions over and over and getting small rewards.
Okay.
And that is, Farmville is the absolute, click on a box over and over and over and
over. Reddit, which everybody talks about, is Minecraft.
Minecraft. Which, by the way, I had to look that up on YouTube to have somebody else explain it to me, because the actual creator of Minecraft, if you go to the website, doesn't say anything about it.
Nothing.
It's in beta. It's not even a release
always
date.
In beta. All social apps are always in beta. Farmville's still in beta.
Well, you should look at the website, because this guy opened up his beta,
made
$350,000 in one day.
Yeah.
Doesn't surprise me.
He's crushing.
Zynga, the creator of Farmville, at their height, and they've knocked off a little bit since this point, was bringing in about $1 million a day.
Right. Well, they have like a petabyte of data they push a day.
Yeah, they were setting up, 100 new servers a day or 100 new servers a week. I don't remember which, but...
That's nuts.
Yeah.
That's nuts. So actually, people have created, somewhere out in the cloud, farms.
Yeah.
So we've basically created, let's say the internet was, wild, undiscovered country. We have now started the beginning of our agrarian society.
Okay. Well, have you seen some of these videos
of
Minecraft?
We hope enough Farmvilles will exist to actually start supporting, an artisan town or two.
Right, exactly.
Later on, of course, those will conspire to support Soldier Town.
Right. I want the damn Hittites to come down and conquer Farmville.
Have you seen some of these Mineville videos?
They're nuts.
I have not heard of Mineville.
Okay. Minecraft.
Minecraft.
Okay, Minecraft.
You have to use craft or ville in everything
you
make.
Right, right. Yeah. Minecraft is essentially where you the game creates a random terrain for you, and of blocks. They look like Lego blocks. Super.
And the characters look like Lego characters.
The character, everything looks like Lego blocks. And when you click on a block, like a wood block, you keep hacking on it, ding, 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 and when it bursts, you collect some wood. And when you click on the ground, you get dirt. When you click below the ground, you get stone. And then you can take that and you can you can craft them into, you can upgrade the objects. So you can say, I'm taking my wood and making sticks. Then I'm going to take my sticks and make them boards.
Right. And
I'm
taking boards. You know, three blocks of wood and one stone makes a door.
Yeah. And then you make a door and then you can build a house and then you can build a blah, blah. And then, but it keeps going and going and going. And people are building these crazy things, including I saw a guy build a computer. Mm-hmm. Inside Minecraft, one of the things that you can do is you can have these you can build a torch,
mm-hmm.
and they have also these blocks that kind of are like when you light it, it travels like a flaming like a little flaming road in a way.
Okay.
So he can put a whole bunch together, and when you light it, it travels. So what he would do is he made a binary system where you could like put torches in these spots, and then it would light up these these roads, and he built a computer where you could switch like
that's
plus
crazy.
Minus multiply, and then you would see it moving. It took like 3 minutes to like add and subtract, and then on the other side you would see other torches lighting, which was in binary. He goes, okay, those three torches in those spaces means five.
People are making everything. Somebody made a life scale one-to-one replica of the Starship Enterprise. Right. And then I saw this link on Reddit, which I was so intrigued. It said Slarty Bart Fast must play Minecraft. And if you don't know who Slarty Bart Fast is, he's the guy who creates planets in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, right.
And I was like, oh, that right. And I clicked on it. And of course, there's this guy who's created a 1/32nd scale Earth.
I saw that in like water. Like there's like.
It's there. I mean, and there's like there's a scaffolding that's surrounding Earth as he's making it, and
yes,
and
yeah,
you
he has
watch
to build it. You can't float around. So you actually climb up,
right?
And, build
and it's thing. And it's basically like you can do this as with your friends. So there are all these little meeples crawling over the damn Earth, making it.
Yeah,
it's Slarty Bart
like Legos, just like Legos.
It was bizarro,
crazy.
Yeah.
But it's funny because his obviously people have like come in and griefed him. Because you can open up it to the public so other people can help you if you want to.
Or hurt you.
So they can just start, like, unclicking it or whatever. Of course, you go into the Earth and there's all this, like, graffiti essentially made out of blocks. So you go in there and it's like, screw you! You're such a dork or whatever inside there.
Wow.
Yeah. Or did you see the guy who burned down his big house by mistake?
No. Oh, yes.
He's like, I'm doing a video to just to show you guys how to build a hearth in a Mineville.
Yeah.
Or Minecraft. Minecraft. First of all, here's my house, and it's like pretty elaborate.
It's just a gorgeous Frank Lloyd Wright-looking structure that he's made in Minecraft.
Yeah, and so he goes, and then there's a little hearthy thing, which is like made out of stone.
And he goes, look, there's a chimney, and you look up the chimney, and he like looks out.
Says, you need to get some wood, you put it in here, and as long as you have separation between, he lights it. But apparently there wasn't enough separation.
And he goes, oh, what's going on? And it just
starts spreading
all over the house. And he goes over to his fish pond. He starts clicking on the water from the fish pond and like bringing it over to put it on. But it's like it's cubes of water at a time. It's like cube by cube.
Oh my God,
and then
awesome.
He like walks in, and he literally does exactly what you do in a fire. Like he stands there stunned. For a second.
He's like,
looking at it, and I can't believe, no. And then then he runs outside, and he watches his entire house go down.
And if only he paid $75 to the virtual fire department.
Exactly. All right, should we move on? Well, we've kind of hit news.
Let's move on to news. Cue that music.
Okay, news and or reviews and or
do it. Who wants to lead us off?
I'll lead us off. So there's an app that I found. I know you guys know about it.
There's an app for that.
It is called Epic Win.
Oh, I've been using it.
You have been using it?
I downloaded it and tried, but...
Okay.
I am a level 2 dwarven nerd do well.
Epic Win is an app that basically... works as a way and as an RPG. It makes your life into an RPG.
That is correct.
It's a to-do list set up as
achievements as an RPG. And basically you can get more achievements and more experience points the more things that you do on your to-do list.
I have to say I was extremely disappointed in this app.
Really?
Mainly because I wanted it to be kind of like puzzle. I wanted to see a story and all that involved. And me level up my characters to complete a story.
The story is your life, Aaron.
No.
I'm with Aaron on this
because
one.
All it is just a to-do list. I mean, it's literally only a to-do list with some points next to it, and when you've done, it just adds your points. That's
all. Like there are certain things that I would like to have seen them do. Like, one, to make it a better to-do list, right? It is not a functional to-do list. All it says is, like, on this day, do this.
Right.
Give me times and dates, you know, and then so I can actually use it as a calendar or even sync it up with my freaking calendar in the phone.
Right.
So that I – and also I would sort of suggest, you know, coming up with certain keywords, right? So, like, you know, date or workout or running or, you know, all these things.
There is kind of that because you tag each one of your events into either your mind, body, spirit.
Yeah, but you have to do it yourself, and you have to assign the amount of points to it, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, what I started doing was, like, the more I want to do something, the lower point value it is, and the more reluctant I am to do something, the higher point value it is.
Okay.
Right.
You know, like, so go to the gym is, like, 250 out of 300.
You should write this guy, like Aaron did with Steve Jackson, and see if you can get you make him better.
I am a video game producer. He'll either have to pay my ass or out-compete with my application
Didn't
that
Steve
I'll be coming
pay you?
Out with.
Yeah, he paid me.
Yeah, so.
There you go.
No, I totally agree. I mean, this is a great idea for somebody else to do it right.
Yeah. No, seriously. And,
you know what I mean?
He also makes some of the basic mistakes that, like, MMOs did when they first came out. So, you know, at first I'm just putting in my stuff and I'm, you know, I'm moving forward in the game. I'm looking like, oh, my strength just went up one. Oh, my spirit just went up one. It doesn't mean anything. It's just sort of there.
Right.
And then, oh, look, I found an item. If you play long enough, you get enough points, you travel along this path, and you get items.
Mm-hmm.
The first item I got was rancid cat milk.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That sounds like my life.
Yeah. Next thing I got was also rancid cat milk. Then I found, like, an old boot. And I'm like,
give
me sexy items. Like, right. I don't want to be playing this thing and nothing happening. I get rancid
cat milk
pictures.
I gave up after a couple of, I didn't even enter it anymore because I was like, eh.
I'm still doing it because I'm curious about the app, but I'm not curious about what happens.
Huh.
You know, it's sad, really.
Trust me, when I heard it, I downloaded it, and I thought this was such a great idea.
But there's so many things you could combine it with. I mean, you could combine it with, like, Brain Age.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a Brain Age type game, so it actually it recorded whether or not you were getting smarter.
Sure,
you know,
or better yet, you know, if this is about making your life more exciting and more like a game, insert events.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. And,
like,
the creature.
Go,
like,
kiss someone new today that you've never kissed before. 300 points, you know?
Try
a new type of exercise you've never done before. 200 points.
Right.
You
go help. Go volunteer for a charity.
Exactly.
For 700 points. Help. And you get a new invisibility cloak.
Yes. Meet your neighbor. Do a good deed for them.
Say, Don.
Write, like, this guy, Don.
I'm telling you.
You
got
to
write
him. You don't have to write this guy. You can do your own.
Yeah, I'm not just saying.
All right.
You know, so, I mean, it's heart is in the right place. And the concept of turning your life into a game, turning the humdrum things
mm-hmm.
you do every day into mm-hmm. a game is more than admirable. I think it's a really, really good and wise decision, a wise impetus.
Yeah.
But not well.
The other way to do that is have children. Because then you have to make all your humdrum tasks into games.
Yeah.
Or you go insane.
Right.
Let's play throw everything in the hamper.
Yay! No, don't throw that in the hamper.
Don't throw that in the hamper.
Where's that grilled cheese sandwich?
Well, we'll stick on video games. I want to talk about Halo Reach.
All right, go.
I was going to wait for this to be on the catch-up episode, but there's so many other things to catch up on.
Okay.
So Halo Reach came out.
Yes.
It is the fifth installment of
Aaron
Halo.
Aaron and I have started our multiplayer on it.
Yep, we started. But
even though I've been there and you haven't, it's fine. And I have a kid. You have excuses,
now,
I'm sure.
I was on it for 2 weeks before you joined.
Oh, I'm sure.
And I didn't play at all.
No, I understand.
For you. Okay, so Halo Reach campaign. I don't know how great the campaign is yet. It starts out pretty fun. It's a four-person co-op a la Halo 3, and it feels like kind of like that. The graphics are significantly better than the other Halos.
Right.
By, like, a lot. It does not compare graphically to, like, Call of Duties and that type of thing, which blow your mind out of the water how good they look. But this looks pretty damn good.
Right.
This game, though, is all about
multiplayer. As it has been for the last few incarnations.
Correct. This, though, the amount of options that they put into the way to customize the game, each game you're playing,
yes,
and how dramatically it can change the game, makes it so that this game is going to be played for a long time.
Yeah.
You can literally change every aspect of everybody's characteristics.
And I will say they took into a lot of consideration in terms of the multiplayer certain problems that you had. If you have problems with people who are griefing and who are a pain in the ass when you're playing, you can set your preferences so you get less pain in the asses on your list. It may take longer to load you a set of people.
Yeah.
But
this actually, what you do is you pick a personality type that you are, and it tries to find those personality types. Like, are you super competitive or you're a friendly player? Are you a talker or are you dead silent? Because you've been in those games you want to play like a group game and you want everyone to talk to each other.
And all you hear is like,
oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That sounds like Chat Lourette.
You can just avoid those people. And it does a pretty good job of like finding people. And I've always thought that Halo's ranking system works.
Yes.
Like, I've never seen in another video game. Like, if you will be playing with people of your level if you play
really?
A ranked game.
I didn't know that.
That is very rare in video games. Mainly because there's just so many damn people playing. But, like, Call of Duty, there's a gazillion people who play Call of Duty. And that ranking
and their
system
guys,
is broken.
Yeah.
100%.
I've seen guys kill me with a knife.
Yeah, you can be... You can start that game up being a single player, and then you walk into a room with a level 50 guy. There's helicopters and dogs all around you because he's ranked up, and you've got some dumb shit weapon, and you can't do anything. I hate that goddamn game. Halo, on a different level. The other thing that's awesome about Halo, and this is the thing that I've been addicted to, is that the Forge mode, which is their map building section, is... awesome.
It's huge. It's huge, too. I mean, it's really, really, really
big. It reminds me of playing in the sand, like in a sandbox, where you've got all these nooks and crannies, and you know, like you'd make roads out of a hill, you'd find some, like, part of a tree that had looked like a ramp, so you'd dig a little bit further. It's exactly like that, except you've got all these pieces that you're snapping together.
And the things that people have made, somebody made the battle room from Ender's Game.
Yeah.
Made it. And it works. I was like, what? And it's like...
I'm building a Helm's Deep invasion where you have to go and blow up the doors, invade inside, get into the tunnels at the end and escape. You can even make these little mini missions where one team has to go in and do... first wave, they have to do a territories where they take over territories. Then they go in and they have to like... plant a bomb and move it, and then there's a capture the flag all in one game.
Yeah.
And there's like attack
and defense. Series of different tasks as you go through. And if you fail at the first one, then you go to the next one. If you complete it, then you keep then teams switch sides.
This sounds more fun than the last Halo.
The
last Halo I played, I lost interest after about 15 minutes.
Plus, you were going to vomit on your shoes.
Oh, yeah. I got so sick the last time I played Halo.
This is also good because you can slow down your ability to pivot and stuff like that.
I have to look and see. I'll check out your game while I'm here.
Okay.
The last time I played it, I mean, I had to go lay down for an hour after I played it. I got so ill.
This one, I don't get sick of this one. It's not like Half-Life.
Yeah.
Half-Life really makes... Although, it's very funny. I met what's the name of the lead character in Half-Life? The
Gordon
glass...
Freeman.
Gordon Freeman. Yeah. I met him at a party.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was so funny because I was like, oh, my God, it's Gordon Freeman. And everybody was like, what are you talking about? And I dug up a picture of him on my iPhone, and I went, look. And my iPhone was, like, passed around for half an hour as everybody was like, did you model for this? Because he looked identical. He was even wearing an orange turtleneck. It was crazy.
He's wearing orange power armor.
Yeah, exactly.
And he was carrying around an iron.
Crazy pants.
All right.
Are you going to dress as Tunnel Rat for Halloween?
No, I'm probably going to be a banana.
I am so disappointed in you.
My daughter's a monkey.
I'm thinking about being Tony Stark and doing a suit with like a big power core like bursting.
That would rock.
Through.
Oh, that's fun.
I need an idea. I'm blank this year.
You can be Donkey Kong.
Yeah. Hey.
I was hoping Miro would be Diddy Kong.
That would actually be pretty cool.
Yeah, I was going to give her a barrel and everything like that, but Kat was like, no, Safari. Like,
what Safari?
Exactly.
Overruled.
Exactly.
That's not, that's not a
I was totally overruled. She's like, I'm going to get a Safari hat.
How does a banana fit in with a Safari?
I just think it'd be funny to have a tiny little gorilla chasing after a 6-foot banana.
I would tend to agree.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that's
funny. The way to do it.
Yeah.
Just the happiest looking freaking gorilla ever.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm going for.
All right. So, leaving the world of video games behind,
yes.
I hate to say it, but it looks like M. Night Shyamalan actually may have had a point with The Happening.
What?
The lovely scent of cut grass is the reek of plant anguish. When attacked, plants release airborne chemical compounds. Now scientists say plants can use these compounds almost like language, notifying nearby creatures who can rescue them from insect attacks. So basically, this study is showing that grass, like when attacked by this certain type of caterpillar, releases this chemical that attracts things that eat that caterpillar.
So it's screaming for help.
It's screaming for help. Also,
but we all knew. I mean, I kind of knew that plants.
This is why I'm a fruitarian.
A what?
I'm a fruitarian. I only eat fruit and vegetables.
Oh
and
yeah,
vegetables.
Well, I'm a breatharian. I don't even eat that. I just take the nutrients from the air around me.
Okay.
I eat everything. Even now, everything. I mean, you guys are looking pretty good because I skipped dinner. That's all I'm saying.
So this is...
Well, I mean, more than interesting than that, like, I think, if I recall correctly, it's been a little while since I read the study, but one of the other things that it could do was, like, when the blade is broken, it could actually call types of insect that will chew on the broken part and basically seal up the wound.
Mm, interesting.
You know, so it's this weird symbiosis that is actually...
I smell a like great happening. Poison Ivy movie.
Yeah, on. Seriously. Seriously. This sounds good, so...
I keep... For some reason, when you say, like... I'm thinking of, like... Aquaman, and the grass is like woo, 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 woo. Bugs are coming over and like eating the edges.
Opens a whole new vein of storylines for
awesome.
Poison Ivy. That's actually why I brought it up.
I just love the fact that you can do the Aquaman sound effect.
Well, of course,
pretty right? Well. Actually, I was impressed. Yeah.
And you can do the Pac-Man.
By the way, I actually saw the Aquaman pilot. At long last, have you guys seen that?
Yeah, no. It was for free on iTunes.
Yeah, for a while.
Was
he
it?
Was that Flash Gordon, the guy who played Flash Gordon?
No.
Spinoff from
I'm
Smallville?
Not sure, but it, no. It's well, I think it's the guy who played, later on played Green Arrow.
Green Arrow, right, yeah. Right.
Actually, it is the same continuity, sort of. But because it was a pilot, never entered canon, it doesn't matter.
So pilots suck.
Well, they had him. He played. He played Aquaman in Smallville.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
And then he came back and played Green Arrow?
No.
That's a little weird.
No, they had Aquaman. Aquaman was just bow hunky. Like,
I thought there was a scene where he's like trapped under...
I haven't watched Smallville in God knows how long.
I could.
But it's still out there. You can still get this pilot. And I'm going to say that it wasn't a pile of suck.
Okay.
It wasn't good.
Okay, Iron Man 1 and Spider-Man 1 and 2 being... 5 stars in the superhero
well, this is
universe,
just a pilot of-
and the original Fantastic Four movie, being
Roger Corman
being 0 stars. Where does 2 stars?
It was definitely better than the Roger Corman Fantastic Four.
Okay,
yes,
2 stars.
2 stars.
Okay,
yeah.
Mm. Okay.
So anyway,
I'm with you. I follow. Okay, so just a little a little R.I.P. here. his name was F. Gwynplaine McIntyre. He was a sci-fi writer, and he was also known as Froggy. F stood for Fergus. He was an amazing sci-fi writer. I'm not going to go into his whole big long thing. He was rather sort of ended his life in a nasty way, kind of turned really crabby and kooky and everything like that. But in his heyday, he was a big contributor to the sci-fi community, but he ended up hanging himself and it was really nasty. But check it out, because he did have an amazing life. And there's this really wonderful little write-up on him called Froggy's Last Story. So check it out. F. Gwynplaine McIntyre, rest in peace. Be well.
I spent too much time on Halo, so let's just...
Okay, I just wanted to pay a quick nod to one of the few new TV shows I actually watched this year, Haven on Sci-Fi Channel. Mm. I watched, honestly, I gave up on it about halfway through the series, through the season.
Mm-hmm.
I could see why it might appeal to people. So basically what the story is this female FBI agent, because every sci-fi series on TV must
Emily Rose. Yeah, she was on my pilot with me.
Sure.
The Bond cute chick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty much every sci-fi show in existence now must star an FBI agent.
How is she?
She's not bad.
Okay.
But she doesn't add enough to the show for me to believe the character. But long story short, FBI agent goes to a small town in the middle of nowhere. Something happened a few years before, and some people have strange powers. Something happens with the FBI. She agrees to stay on the town and
X-Files meets Eureka.
Pretty much. Pretty much. Mm. But it's a little lighter than X-Files. I haven't seen Eureka, but from what I have seen of Eureka, a little heavier than Eureka.
It would have to be heavier.
Yeah. It's a little more it's supposed to be a little bit more mysterious, right? But here's my problem with the series. The downsides of the series was outright predictability. Mm. Like, of all the episodes I saw, about 10 minutes into the series, I knew who the bad guy was, I knew what was going on, and there were no surprises throughout the entire portion of the series that I saw.
Right.
Ever.
That's a problem.
The ideas for the series, the ideas for the supernatural stuff, was stuff I'd seen before, you know, like shadows killing people, somebody stealing people's youth, you know, that sort of thing.
Typical X-Files.
Yeah, I've seen this.
X-Files library.
Yeah, I've seen this in cartoons. I've seen this in, you know, Smallville did it a couple of years ago. You know, everything. It's been there, done that.
The suck season where they had to suck things out of you season?
Yeah, pretty much.
That was true, yeah.
But the plus side of the series, and I have to say there were a couple pluses to it, the dialogue was remarkably inconsistent, sometimes being painfully obvious and boring, up to really surprising, like surprisingly good one-liners, occasional scenes where you're like, that was really well executed and well thought through and
like
well written.
There's like one or two writers somewhere in the writer's room knocking it out.
Yeah,
maybe we should.
Just like stepping into a different episode and like doing one scene here, doing two scenes there, fixing this one comeback here. You know, so the reason why I kept watching was because there were a couple one-liners in the first episode where I was like, that was really good. That was like a really well thought through thing. The other thing is, and unfortunately I don't have IMDb in front of me, the male lead of this series is somebody to keep an eye on. He will be coming back in a good series someday. Maybe movies. This guy's really good. So this guy is potential for like Mr. Next sci-fi guy, I think. He's someone to keep your eye on.
Mr. Next Nathan Fillion?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
But he's not Nathan Fillion. He doesn't come across as clever and witty. He's just very dry and very – he's a new David Duchovny to me.
Oh,
you know, he's not super witty, but he knows how to deliver humor in a very kind of straightforward, straight guy kind of way.
Okay.
It's good.
By the way, Castle is doing very well for What's-His-Nuts.
Amazing.
Yeah, very well.
Amazing.
I'm so happy for him. I mean, like Nathan Fillion?
Yeah.
Because he's been the kiss of death to so many series.
Yeah. You know?
But
well,
amazing.
Not in this one.
Yeah,
amazing that Firefly is the one that tanks and everybody loves it, and then Castle, which is like, and people can't stop. I don't get it.
I saw one episode. I thought it was pretty ho hum.
I don't
like
get
an
it.
80s.
Yeah, it's standard formula. Yeah,
or Moonlighting, or any. Yeah. I don't get
it. It's Murder, She Wrote with Angela Lansbury being played by a hot young guy.
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't get it.
All right, should we move on?
We
to
should.
Our topic?
Why don't we?
All right.
I'm going to start us off a little
Give us a little preface.
Serious.
Preface us.
Well, okay, so the reason why we're doing this episode is because a few episodes back, we did an episode on bullying.
Yeah.
And the bullying episode got us a lot of feedback, a lot of people writing in, really kind of hitting home that bullying for a lot of geeks was sort of a core topic. I mean, it was a core issue a lot of us grew up with on a lot of different levels.
And either it was an inceptive experience that made us in a good way or left us with a lot of bad feelings for the rest of our lives.
It's a forge. And you either break under the pressure of it or it makes you something wonderful.
Okay.
You know, but in the news recently, very high profile suicides of six different teens who were literally bullied to death because of a common topic that we didn't discuss during bullying, which was the fact that they were gay.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's difficult to bring up the topic of homosexuality in a lot of different forums. And, you know, one of the reasons why we didn't bring up in Geeks On was because Geeks On is about geeky stuff.
Right.
It's about our interests, about our passions.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the big talking point for this episode. I never talked about me being gay mm-hmm. on the episodes of Geeks On because it, in it my mind, relevant. It was peripheral.
Right.
You know, but then it occurred to me recently, one, I was being intellectually dishonest because we were doing episodes where our significant loved ones mm-hmm. were coming on the show and talking about being in relationships with us. Mm-hmm. You know, we have talked about what it's like being in our relationships in our lives.
True.
And I
made
was
distinctions like we had a all female geeky episode,
right.
but that's
exactly.
we haven't had like the all black
and yeah, exactly.
geek episode
yeah.
or
True.
The all
True.
Gay. I don't know why we decided that all female geek was fine.
Right.
Right. So, you know, it.
We should do an all black episode.
We should do an all black episode.
Actually, or, Ahmed Best said he would come on the show.
All right.
There yeah. you go.
So we would have Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah.
I think the show would be exactly
I
the
think
same.
You would, you know.
So what ended up happening was we've done outreach to young geeks, you know, telling them that there is a future for them out there.
Yeah.
Right. But by the same token, we haven't been extending to 10% of the geek population,
which is the young gay geek.
And, you know, right now there's a group out there called the Trevor Project that's doing an outreach, talking about the It Gets Better campaign. I don't know if you've seen these videos. But they're videos by major celebrities that are either playing gay characters or are gay that are trying to talk to young kids on the edge of suicide to say it gets better, mm-hmm. right?
And it's very interesting to me because as far as I see it and looking, you know, where my kid's going to be in school and like that, mm-hmm. it seems so much more accepting now than it was in my time and especially more than in my parents' time. Mm-hmm. And still, there are these events, like the young man who was trying to have an intimate moment with a guy in college and oh. his two roommates. Did you hear about this?
Yeah, I have a list of these different kids.
His two roommates immediately outed him to the internet. And
well, I think
they broadcast him.
Yeah.
They set up cameras in his room
yeah.
and said what time to tune in to mm-hmm. watch this kid who yeah. was in the closet.
And that's what I mean.
And let me put a star here, an asterisk, because I want to bring this back up. In a future episode, which I'm going to tentatively call Future Shock, where basically the technology that we're using to do things that humans have always done mm-hmm. has now reached a level where we can seriously cause damage with simple technology. This being one case of it.
Well, you know? And, you know, where this used to be somebody taking a picture
right.
and hanging up in a bathroom
right.
and
yeah.
12 people would see it and then your whispers would go around. Now, with the technology, that bathroom picture is full-blown video and millions of people are watching it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know...
And what kills me is these people doing it were probably geeks.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh, absolutely. And
so it's geeks turning on, you know, geeks who... I'm sorry, I'm going off of pictures of the two kids who did this. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing that these are people who knew what it was like to be a geek and knew what it was like to be ostracized and then took the opportunity to turn around and do it to somebody else. Mm-hmm. And I have this beautiful image...
I saw one picture of a guy, he looks like a total, like, you know, like your...
Your average douche nozzle?
Like, you're kind of like a douchebaggy type yeah. of look to him. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're kind of like, if you're going to cast somebody in a TV show as the douche, one of them looked like that. And I was like,
right.
this is the same asshole who drives like a douchebag on the road and parks like a douchebag and does all... I mean, I know this dude.
Yeah.
I know this guy entirely.
Now, yeah. what I'm interested in from you, Don, is do you think that because now we live in a cybernetic or a cyber-linked society where more and more of our information is out there, and even
yeah.
and especially with teenagers nowadays, they're voluntarily putting so much of their information out there, whether or not that encourages one to come out of the closet or whether or not that encourages one to retreat further into the closet. I mean, where do you see the cultural identity?
It's a balance, you know, and that's why I wanted to do this episode tonight talking about gays and sci-fi. When I was a kid, I looked for every possible trace that there was someone else out there like me.
Hmm.
I mean, I scoured everything, you know, and I didn't see it. I didn't find it. I remember Logan's Run, and this is probably one of the big reasons that...
You're not going to
say
the android was gay, was he?
No, but and you may
sure
not remember
like
this. This is a scene you may not remember in Logan's Run.
In the movie or the TV show?
The movie.
Okay.
Right? In the movie, he goes home after work and he's like, "Oh, you know, I don't want to be alone tonight." He gets on the like Datamatic 2000 and he's flipping through the different people that are out there, right?
Yeah.
And there's beautiful woman, young guy, and he reacts with disgust and he goes on to the next choice.
Yeah,
right?
I don't remember that.
Right. But for me, that was the first time I saw a hint in any movie, anywhere, that there were gay guys, right? That was the first time.
Right.
And also homophobia all in one breath.
And homophobia all at the same time. And that was the thing. Every example I could think of.
Well, that's not necessarily homophobia.
His disgust
is homophobia.
It's not homophobia, but it's repulsion.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm like looking to see who I want to bang around with. I see a dude, I'm like, ugh.
Right, and that's understandable.
But that was a director's choice. This isn't necessarily.
But he also didn't react that way to the other women he didn't want to bang.
Right.
You know, it was.
Well,
this is less than a woman. Well, yeah, it is. But you know, keep in mind.
More than anything, it's the filmmakers who've made that choice to express something there.
But also in the history of cinema, like when you look back at it, every example of a gay character before probably.
Recently.
Mid-90s, gay is either super effeminate and therefore unmasculine and sort of comical, and that's when it's being treated nicely.
Right.
Or villainous,
right.
You know, and sort of predatory and awful.
But that was also everything.
Yeah.
Every black character was a pimp.
That's true.
Know.
I mean, that's one thing I want to get into.
Poitier.
Every single minority goes through the exact same phases.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, I was is research for some of this episode. Well, before we get into the actual sci-fi stuff, going back to the TrevorProject.org, if you are a gay geek, you are trying to figure something out, you are going through stuff, you know, I want to put myself out there as an example right now of, you know, going out into the real world, and I found.
You found
a huge community.
You found a gay geek role-playing group.
Yes. I mean, I've been invited to...
I mean, that's extraordinary.
I've been invited to play... actually, I've had listeners approach me when they found out that I was gay to go, like, I am overjoyed to realize that there was, you know, a representation in Geeks On, even if I didn't know it.
Right.
And that kind of hurt. You know, I felt bad that I was betraying a portion of the geek population who was feeling unrepresented on our show.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So... It's time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as with the TrevorProject.org, it gets better. And it's not just that I found gay friends out there, guys, and gay geeks and all that stuff. I am pointing out that I have a fantastic circle of straight friends who are incredibly accepting and have been wonderful to me through, frankly, the worst 2 years of my life, over the, you know, with changes to my body, with the cancer and all this stuff. And my friends... gay, straight, whatever, have been by my side. It gets better. You know, come out the other side, leave your fucking podunk towns behind, fuck them. You know, there is a fantastic freaking life out there for you to grasp.
So perhaps what we're saying, to use a geek reference, is, and I'm stealing from a Christian geek reference, is not to come out of the closet, but actually go through it to Narnia.
Yeah, pretty much.
Huh.
Yeah. No, it's true. Huh. You do have to come out of the closet, but no one ever told you which side.
You can go through the coats.
Yeah. You can come out the other side. There's going to be a buck awesome fawn on the other side with ripped abs and waiting for you. It's going to be great.
You
just said buck awesome.
because the first thing they saw was a little beaver.
There are some fine beaver on the other side of the wardrobe, man. You know? Little lesbians out there, there's, you know...
I'm just saying, that was the first thing they saw.
It depends which of them you're talking about.
All right.
Yeah.
Lucy saw Fawn.
You know, but, so, gays and sci-fi.
Time to see you.
Gays and sci-fi. We're going to get some other stuff in the future, but, you know, what Matt brought up was true. I just wanted to go through some of the history of gays and portrayal and sci-fi. Mm-hmm. To be honest,
when Don suggested this topic, I said, I don't know what I'm going to say.
Right.
Part of it, I brought it up with somebody, and somebody said, well, talk about like gay characters and like things that, you know, that you've seen. And I said, you know, the funny thing is I don't look out for it. Like when Ted was here,
you guys were talking about like gay superheroes and stuff.
Yeah.
And I have never heard of
Well, that's
one,
what,
one of them.
I did invite Ted to be here, but he was launching the hub yesterday, so he said he would probably be drunk today. But he will come back and we'll talk more about it. But yeah, I mean, Ted knows off the top of his head, and you do, like every single gay character in the entire
world.
There
ain't that many.
Right.
You know, and when you here's one of the things about sci-fi, you know, we look for ourselves in everything we love.
True.
You know, so how many were you looking for Asian characters?
I have yet to find an Asian superhero. I mean, I'm sure I know people know more than Silver Samurai, but
there's Starfire, Sunfire.
I mean,
you know,
what's the guy from Super Friends?
Oh, Kwasi Nihoni Hayaku? Yeah, come on. You know,
hey,
well, that's the problem. A lot of the Asian superheroes that were out there were made by white guys who, guess what? Yeah. There are buckets of hot Asian superheroines.
Oh, yeah.
You know, throw a rock, you hit one in every group.
Yeah.
But try and find an Asian one.
Asian guy? Not so much.
Yeah, they're pretty stereotypical, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And they're really good at martial arts.
True's the
same.
Well,
maybe that's why, like, Kato was so popular, because he kind of didn't fall under the stereotype.
Right.
Like, besides the fact that he was the driver.
Well, yep.
They let him kick ass, and he didn't talk like a freaking moron.
That's why I'm interested to see what they do with this new Seth Rogen one, because his accent is thick.
Yeah, well, but they also make him, you know, he's kind of like the guy, he's the cool guy, and Seth Rogen's the moron. Well,
yes.
Right. And the same things that Asians fall into is the same thing that gays fall into. A lot of the gay characters were made for mainstream audiences. So, like, I remember a lot of the gay characters from the 90s, which I bet most of you have forgotten. There's, like, a gay superhero from the Crisis on Infinite Earths who is, like, a bad Latino gay stereotype with a big pink scarf and mustache.
You were gesturing. I was like, Ascot?
Yeah, but, Ascot. Know. Pretty much. You know, it was bad. It was bad.
Well, okay, so, you know, part of, you know...
Well, I did a little research.
Okay, okay.
Let me go back through some of the history here. Something I found really interesting when I was looking onto this is, like, you divide it up into different kind of epochs of gays in sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
Something I found was really interesting. Apparently, the very first sci-fi story known to man was a gay one, right? True history.
Just being gay was science fiction enough, almost.
Not in this time period. True history by the Greek writer Lucian in 120 to 185 AD has been called the earliest surviving example of science fiction and the first ever gay science fiction story.
Hmm.
The narrator is suddenly enveloped by a typhoon and swept up to the moon, which is inhabited by a society of men that are at war with the sun. After the hero distinguishes himself in combat, the king gives him his son, the prince, in marriage. The all-male society reproduces, male children only, by giving birth from the thigh or by growing a child from a plant produced by planting the left testicle in the moon soil.
Interesting.
How weird is that?
Lucian was into some wacky shit.
Yeah, seriously. I'm suspecting that Lucian hit in the hemlock a little
bit.
Yeah,
just a little tad.
Teabagging and actually coming up like into the dirt and actually...
Oh, you know, Lord. It's some weird stuff, but...
I guess we're going to have to do explicit on this, Dan. Shoot.
Well, it's funny. Like, I'm looking at all this stuff, and, you know, it's the same thing that happened in every other minority group. Exactly what you said. 20s through 30s, there were gay stories out there in sci-fi, but they were evil, demented people who wanted to do horrible things to you or the
society,
world.
It was a disease at that point in time, or viewed as.
Yeah.
So, the evil prince always is kind of fey and gay.
Right.
Exactly. It actually says it right here. The most popular role for the homosexual was a decadent slave-holding lordling whose corrupt tyranny was doomed to be overthrown by young male heterosexual heroes.
Right.
Right. I think... when was Dune written?
Dune?
Oh, Dune.
You mean...
Frank Herbert?
Yeah. Frank Herbert?
Frank
Dune?
Herbert. When was that written?
I'd say 50s.
Okay.
I'd say 1950s.
All right.
I'll Google it. We'll get back to it.
We'll get back to you. So in the 40s and 50s, you hit sort of the golden age of science fiction, where basically the best way you could say it was there were no gays. They were removed entirely. You know, and it's sort of interesting. You have opportunities to discuss it with all these Amazon women and the moon stuff from the 1950s, where you had sort of all female societies that were just waiting for a man to show up,
right.
But there's no trace of lesbianism. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sort of interesting. We're pausing while we look up Dune. The only reason why I bring
I
it
found
up
a
is
sand dune. Hang on.
Do 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 do. You know, the 40s and 50s, you actually start kind of hitting actual repression stuff.
65.
It was 1965.
1965.
Okay. So that's actually the new wave stuff here. So basically, in the 1950s, you start seeing stuff like The Crooked Man, right? This I find very interesting. It was first published in Playboy, where inhumane homosexuals begin to oppress the heterosexual minority.
Well, that's interesting because Hugh Hefner, when he was recently admitted to being a big time homophobe, and he's recently come around,
yep,
and made apologies to the LGBT community.
Yep. But basically this sort of hits sort of the vein of what you get in the 1950s, which is and the other one is The Wanting Seed. Homosexuality is required for official employment. Burgess treats this one as aspect of an unnatural state of affairs, which includes violent warfare and the failing of the natural world, right? Now, I found this stuff interesting because now I'm looking at the Christian right basically saying the same thing. Homosexuals are trying to take over the world,
right,
impose this sort of gay agenda. So all of a sudden, the Christian right is using sci-fi, you know, the what if, you know, to
the 1984.
Yeah. The gay agenda is trying to take away the rights of the straight, mm-hmm, and they're going to force your children to be gay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a direct throwback to science fiction from this period.
Right.
Which is sort of interesting.
The alternate sociology sci-fi.
Right. Now,
well, you know, that pendulum swings because, you know, right after the 50s, we've got all those 60s hippie movies and stuff being made, and mm-hmm, they didn't have
right
a problem with that.
The new wave sci-fi, right? And so it's basically new wave sci-fi, 60s, 70s. All of a sudden, LGBT issues are sidestepping it by presenting a lot of neutered things. Here's like one example. Samuel R. Delaney, the Nebula award-winning short story, I and Gamora, posits the development of neutered human astronauts and then depicts the people who become sexually oriented towards them,
mm-hmm,
right? So by imagining a new gender, the resultant sexual orientation, the story allows readers to reflect on the real world while maintaining an estranging distance. So now there are these neutered astronauts that anyone can be sexually attracted to because they're not male, they're not female, mm-hmm, but you can do whatever you want with them.
Right.
So now we have homosexuality as neutered, as the other, as...
Well, Zardoz kind of does.
Yeah, they touch on that.
They touch on that a little, mm-hmm, bit.
Right. Though at this point, you also start getting feminist writers coming in, and they start a lot of feminist writers start portraying bisexuality as being the norm of the future.
Mm-hmm. And I also remember, what was it, the H.G. Wells Time Machine, when I saw that movie version, when they eventually showed the Eloy.
Yeah.
The Eloy were very much portrayed as this androgynous gay community.
Yeah.
That was very, you know,
yeah,
loosely moraled.
Not really gay, though, bisexual.
Bisexual.
Like,
you know,
just
whatever.
It didn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because they were into just their taking pleasure in everything and had everything just given to them. They didn't work. They just, things appear.
Now, Star Trek was big into commenting on social mores or mores, whichever it is.
Star Trek did not even touch on that until way later.
It's funny, though.
They were getting through just black-white issues.
Right, true. He has black on the left-hand side of his face.
Exactly.
I love that.
Though that episode has been cited by gay scholars as, like, you know, trying to put some sort of homosexuality into that early part of Star Trek as being the one where...
Why, because it was Frank Gorshin?
Yeah, like...
That dude...
You know.
He was just broadcasting his junk on that. In that little bodysuit.
He was also the Riddler. I mean, maybe the man had, you know, he was like...
He loved his tights.
I only do tights. I only do bodysuits.
Broadcasting his junk.
You know, so I don't want to get too luxury and stuff, but, you know, we'll start weaning off the history at this point. But from 80s to present, basically you hit a point where blatant homophobia isn't really acceptable anymore. But you still don't really, aren't really allowing gay characters to be the lead.
Right.
At best, they're a spice to any sort of recipe. So I started finding some interesting stuff. Like, I didn't even hear of most of these things. There's a writer named David Gerold who wrote a piece called The Martian Child. about a gay man who adopts a child, right? Again, this is an award-winning piece. Mm-hmm. You know, all sorts of it focus on it. But when it gets crossed over into the film version, basically all of a sudden,
he's straight.
You know, it's just
oh,
not really...
Oh, right. That's the John Cusack movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, yeah, so... he's not gay.
Yeah, so but you see that a lot. You know, Tom Cruise, Interview with a Vampire. All of a sudden, all that sort of homoeroticism is removed from that character.
Right.
Which is integral to
the
story.
Well, you've never tasted life until you've felt it come over your lip in a nice, hot gush of blood.
You know, so, I mean, I have a bunch of different things here where basically, you know, when it crosses over. So what you start seeing is really not until Xena on television... when all of a sudden you start seeing homosexuality enter the mainstream. Xena is heralded as sort of the first major lesbian character on TV, but
was
only
she really?
Subtextually. If you watch it again...
I know she was, and I know there's the whole thing with her.
Well, I know she had
her.
A following.
Yeah.
Well, it's one of those things where, like, if you're looking for it, you will see it. If you're not looking for it, you will never see it.
Right. And actually, you know? I think because the following, it was almost like the Gleeks now with Glee is
actually,
that
that's a good parallel.
They're moving the show more than the show is moving them now.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting.
But what you're seeing is that show all of a sudden stumbling into an audience that is desperate to see any drop of itself anywhere on television.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how many lesbians do you think are wandering around out there going like, wow, I want to see like, you know, a sci-fi Greek mythos that speaks to me, you know, but they finally found something. And so all of a sudden you see an entire television show being moved by this demographic.
Because Xena was not that originally.
It's tricky because, you know, as we all know, you are, when you make a TV show or movie, it's a business as well as a...
Absolutely.
And so, you know, people are looking at numbers. So when you make these type of decisions... you're usually making a statement, really. I mean, are we not?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It is a statement.
So that means that if it is going to be a statement, then you're, you know, there is a possibility of losing audience because they just don't identify with the statement. So, like, if your main character is gay and that's a specific portion of the show, then you better... have, I guess, a either make it so that when you're watching it, you don't see it, or if you're watching it and see it, then it's speaking to you.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because in the 1990s, that was sort of okay with the gay viewership. I mean, it's not okay, but they were more accepting of that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, they were so excited. We were so excited just to see any representation at all. We were willing to forgive the fact that nobody else noticed it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's the first time you see a lead character where people are starting to ask that question.
Mm-hmm.
Then you hit Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and all bets are off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Willow Rosenberg, the hottest geek girl ever known to man, comes out of the closet.
Right.
All right, and then
standing on the shoulders of Xena.
They do that several seasons in.
So
they decide to write that. So they lure everybody in, and then they decide to. Probably change the story. They probably have to write that in.
Yeah, she does. She does lust after Xander in the first few seasons and stuff like that.
But it's sort of a sexless lusting,
right?
You know, I mean, it's the safe lusting.
Well, she was the nerd, and I can't because I'm the nerd.
Yeah, I mean, I really wonder if she was ever slated to be gay, but she obviously was a good choice. Like, no one was like, "That's crazy." She dated Xander beforehand. I mean,
Right. Well, what's interesting to me is, and I'm the first person to accuse about this, is that I get very sensitive on things that offend me when I see them on TV shows. But in the same breath, I've also noticed that there's, when I was listening to you go through that list, there was a certain level of sci-fi that was there that really challenged and asked questions about our society. And the only sci-fi show that I've seen do that recently was Battlestar Galactica.
Right.
And even they... tended to shy away from certain issues, especially, you know, issues as they pertain to sexuality. And I wonder whether or not we're dumbing down our sci-fi in certain ways by being too PC. And I don't know whether
I don't think that Battlestar Galactica was that PC. I think they decided to
I don't think it was on their docket to cover every social issue.
Mm-hmm.
They did decide, in kind of a very strange way, make one of their characters gay, a lesbian.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was, and maybe it is a way of portraying it.
The like, Admiral.
Yeah. She... it wasn't a storyline.
It wasn't a storyline. So, well,
it kind of wasn't.
I mean, one of the things with the Cylons is that Cylons are infinitely reproducible, right? And they're mm-hmm. reproducing the same gender over and over and over and over again. Yet they have all these questions about human reproduction, about love, about everything like that. Yeah. One would think that would beg for the Cylons to have an episode where the Cylons are trying to figure out lesbianism, trying to figure out homosexuality, you know, in all
well,
its
Well, there were scenes where there, like, there were several of them in bed, and there were, like, several women in bed, and they kind of just winked.
Well, I think it's sort of interesting that in Battlestar Galactica, again, you know, notice, the thing to notice that we're when we start talking about television, every major example that I can cite up to up until this point is lesbianism.
Yes.
And so...
Because it's safe.
Well, it's very safe, yeah, it's safe and it plays into the male fan base.
Right, sure.
You know, so, you know, again, most of the lesbians that we're talking about are smoking hot.
Mm-hmm.
They're what a lesbian friend of mine lovingly referred to as the long fingernail lesbian, right? Yeah.
Lipstick
lesbians.
Well, long fingernail lesbian is a very specific type of lesbian. A long fingernail lesbian is a type of woman who will never actually be touching another woman. A lesbian does not want a woman with long fingernails coming at her. If you understand what I'm saying, I'm trying to be a little...
Yes, you're cagey. Yes. I'm with you. I'm with you.
So, you know...
No, I get it.
Starbuck. Starbuck, for example, had trimmed fingernails. You can't imagine Starbuck, but she's a straight woman.
Right.
Which is actually, in a lot of ways, for a lot of straight women, was a fantastic thing. Mm-hmm. She was probably the first portrayal of, like, a female warrior, you know, in a realistic way. That, you know, you believe could kick your ass and was still a straight woman.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, so, we have Ripley.
Vasquez.
And we have...
They're a rarity, you know? But
they were
existed.
Also supporting.
Sarah
they were not,
Connor. Yeah.
They were not
the lead.
They were not the lead. Well, Ripley.
Sarah Connor.
Sarah Connor is...
Ripley.
Yeah, Sarah Connor is a great role model.
So anything by James Cameron.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody well, else
then,
can go to pop.
And then he unravels it with True Lies.
Right.
But, you know, when you, again, going back to these things... there are gay male supporting characters that nobody noticed or that they swept under the rug. Xena has Joxer has a gay brother.
Mm-hmm.
No one remembers that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a minor character, doesn't matter, really. Andrew in Buffy was a closeted gay male character.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But most people go, oh, right. I kind of remember that.
Huh.
You know, Gata in Battlestar, you know, the web series mentions that he's gay. But swept under the carpet.
Right.
You know?
In the show, he's just angry.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so it really begs the question, if sci-fi is asking these questions about sexuality, why does it have to be in the way that people are most comfortable with again and again and again and again?
Well, if sci-fi is asking questions about society, then why does it have to be these comfortable questions again and again and again?
I mean, Star Trek, you know, you asked the question about Star Trek mm-hmm. before. Star Trek... has been societally accepted as one of the leading questionings of, you know, it's the leading version of sci-fi.
Right.
With
United Colors of Benetton.
With thousands of episodes in the many different versions that it's come out in.
Mm-hmm.
It's had lesbianism in one episode?
There were a couple, actually.
Two episodes?
There was the one on Deep Space Nine where they really went into sexuality basically, I think one of – who is it? The Trill?
Yeah,
she changed bodies, and so the sexuality was irrelevant. And that was a very interesting episode. I actually thought that was a very interesting episode because it calls into question a true alien, which I – you know, that's one of the biggest faults I have with Star Trek is that every single alien in Star Trek is just a great forehead prosthetic.
Right.
You know, whereas the Trill, being a symbiont, were actually a functionally different alien.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that episode specifically because not only were they calling into question sexuality, but they were calling in question, you know, how a different species works.
You know, but still, the thing that it boils down to is that it becomes an episode issue.
Right.
But remember, that episode of Star Trek was not aired in certain states in the United States.
Was it not?
Yeah. That's right.
I did not know that.
That's right.
It was not aired.
And wasn't there a Beverly Crusher kiss or something like that? Was also that was fully cut out of the episode?
I thought that was the Trill one, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. That was the Trill one.
That was the Trill one?
Yeah, that was the Trill one.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, she falls in love with a man. The trail moves to a female body, comes back and says, I still love you. Don't you love me? And she's like, I'm trying to. I can't.
Yeah.
And it is human nature. We have a sexuality.
Yeah. Right.
Both times in Star Trek, if I recall correctly, it was a trail thing.
Right. Well, and you know, part of that, though, is because that is a great test.
It's a gimmick.
Yeah.
It's a test to say, this was a love test more than like a gay anything test. Mm-hmm. It was like, the person came back as a different gender, but was completely the same, saying, told her,
it's still me.
Hey, it's still me. Why don't you still, can't you love me the same? And she was saying, it's built into humans. We can't.
Right. So like actually calling into question two things there, also calling into, is the nature of sexuality, is it genetic? Which has been a big fight within the
Is it a biological drive?
Is it a biological drive or not?
And nothing more.
And coming at that from the heterosexual side.
Well, I'm not touching that. Yeah. Well, how do you think a sci-fi gay character could be done without it? Like, do you feel like it can be done?
Do you think it has been done?
People will watch it.
I think it finally. Okay, well, you have your progression, right? We've gotten up to Buffy at this point. The next big jump in the progression is a huge jump, which is the Torchwood series from BBC. Hmm. The Torchwood series has a omnisexual lead who is not only does he have an ongoing boyfriend in the series, who is. Actually, it's funny. I read too much subtext into it when I watch the series. I actually don't think his boyfriend is gay. His boyfriend, I believe, seduces him in order to get into the agency. And then actually ends up sort of shocked that he's in a relationship with this guy.
Yeah, yes, you read too much.
Well, they hint at it, and I can support it if you watch the series. Okay. But the point of the series is, it's the first time. The reason why it's such a big jump is not only is he omnisexual, sleeping with guys, women, everything. But he's an action hero.
Right.
And masculine. And, decidedly not sort of the effeminate.
Not a feat.
He's not a feat. Like, you can sort of, Dorian Gray from,
Right. Stuart, what town?
Yeah, like, there was something sort of effeminate about him. Mm-hmm. I sort of suspected he might be a gay character in there. Right. But he is an action hero in that, but very effeminate.
Now, is this a state-sponsored show?
It is a state-sponsored show. It's BBC.
So that's what I'm wondering if, like, a company would ever get behind.
Well, the funny thing was, I mean, I've read some of the fan forums. He wasn't intended to have that boyfriend when they started the series.
Oh.
He was supposed to have this sort of on-again, off-again relationship with the female lead of the series.
Right.
But the fans demanded the relationship with Yanto.
They made him into a bon vivant.
Yeah. They wanted that, so the gay creator of the series was like, fine, let's do it.
Very interesting.
When I was going through basically these different listings of major gay characters in TV shows, that's it. That's all I was able to come up with, was Willow from Buffy, Xena, and Jack.
So we always say that...
And he's the first male one.
We always say that geeks accept, and geeks accept this, and we're the ones who accept, and yet... You can have Will and Grace's. You can have all these other shows that do really well, meaning a huge portion of the population is watching, and yet the geeks won't do it. So what does that say?
Well, I wanted to ask,
are we hypocrites?
Well, I wanted to ask that of you guys. Like, do you feel uncomfortable reading a book or watching a television show?
I don't
with
feel uncomfortable. I have to say that.
Can you click with him the same way you would with
I
someone?
Don't know.
I had a problem with. I will say I had a problem with Interview with a Vampire.
Okay.
It was too much.
That's a great example, actually.
Because it was so much gay sexuality. I mean, I was like, fine. And then I just felt like I was like, okay, too much. I reached a saturation point with that novel where I was like, I can't. No, I'm not saying the movie. Mm. I'm saying reading the books.
Oh, the books.
I read books in series. Mm-hmm. And I literally had to go and like, I felt like.
Get a Playboy?
Exactly.
I need to look at boobs for a while.
Oh, breasts. Thank God. No. It was more. It actually, when I was talking about it to a friend, I said it was just too much dark chocolate. It was just like, it was just blood and homosexuality. And for some reason, neither of those subjects were things that just, you know, played into me. But it was so deeply ingrained in the book, and it didn't sing. Mm-hmm. So I will have to say that I am the hypocrite. Yeah, because I am like, I'll be universally
accepted. I don't think so. I mean, I need to be able to relate to any story. Willow Grace or Star Trek. Any of those things. I have to be able to relate. And if they find a way of getting me to relate to the story or the characters or whatever, then I'm hooked. But if that means that the story or the show's concept is about something that I don't get, then I'm just going to be a little less interested in it. So making a character gay just flat out doesn't necessarily mean anything to me, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. But
would you have
if I want to see Captain Kirk fall in love every week and have these love stories that I can kind of get on board with, that would be easier for me to do than watching every week.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Would you have been on board with Star Trek as much as you were when you were a kid if every week Captain Kirk was banging around with a new guy? It was the
green guy.
He's with the green guy every week. Would you have been on board?
No, I wouldn't. Huh.
But would you be able to? Would you still be on board with it if he got with a green guy once? Would that break it for you?
Well, it would break the character, obviously, for me.
It would.
Yeah,
it would.
Yeah, it would break that character. He wouldn't be.
What if it was a Trill green guy? And it'd been a princess.
I mean, this is where it gets interesting.
Specific would break that character, but
I mean, if you went gay once, like I mean, like if Indiana Jones got with a guy, you know,
for straight guys, going gay once is like it's not like a girl experimenting in college, you know, with her girlfriend. If a guy goes gay once, it's a big step.
Well, actually, this is really there's something that said on the Kinsey sale. I guess the Kinsey sale runs 1 to 6, and it said women have much more slippability up and down that scale. They move, like, all the way through the scale, whereas men tend to move at a much lesser point through that scale. Much less.
Like, if a girlfriend said, oh, yeah, in college I, like, made out with a girl or whatever, I'd be like, okay, whatever.
But that's titillating to you, right?
Well, yeah, but that's a separate thing. But it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't say anything about my girlfriend. Like, I'm not going, she could be gay. Mm-hmm. Or I don't even think I was like, okay, whatever you try. If a guy friend was like, yeah, I made out with a guy or two in college, I'd be like, really? Wow. That's like that's a little bigger. Don't you think? I mean, be honest. I mean, honestly, it's a little bit bigger. Yeah. So
now I've been with women, for example. Do you think that I'm in danger of falling back into a straight lifestyle?
No.
You know, so
I just think you just move through the Kinsey scale far more than I do.
Okay. I don't think I'm moving through the scale. I think I'm pretty much
you're
set.
You're pretty
where
much
I am.
Set now?
Yeah.
I'm a 5.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where you. I mean, I don't know about the scale for one thing.
Right.
But well, it's Kinsey. I think the question that I'm asking, though, is like, so you're no longer able to put yourself in the shoes of that character. And this is not a condemning thing. I totally get it.
No, I'm saying if Captain Kirk did it once, I'm not saying I wouldn't like the show. I'm just saying it would be definitely a different character for me.
Would you go to your friends and go, hey, did you see last night's episode?
It's like Kirk is banging around with a green dude.
What was that?
Like,
what why?
Was up with that? Yeah, I would be like,
and
what
was the tribble thing? I don't know. It was a big episode in my head. I don't know.
But yeah, it wouldn't necessarily. Like, I'm trying to think of another. It just doesn't.
Like,
happen.
James Bond. He's trying that to would, seduce. No, okay, no, he's trying to seduce would, his way into four would, into yeah, right, the bad thinking, guy's thing.
See, that's the thing is, like, when you pick those, like, super. Like, super males, like Kirk and, you know, that's game-changing stuff.
But you have to understand. You also have to understand, from my perspective, right? I have to put my feet into their shoes all the time. You know, I'm constantly finding connections with these people that have absolutely no. I'm just surprised that.
Like, you don't dislike all James Bond movies because he bangs around the chicks.
Absolutely not. Like, I think that's part of him. I think that's fantastic. I love watching him do it. I'm totally into it.
I seriously don't know.
The fact that he would never sleep with a guy.
James Bond, I don't know if I would like it as much.
This is interesting because what you're talking about with women, where it's acceptable.
Yeah.
Right? Is it acceptable because society has told you and me, Aaron, that it is acceptable and therefore we're okay with it?
Right.
And for.
And it is
hot. And even and it is, yeah, whatever for whatever. But it's hot because it's that because
it's acceptable.
Because guys go, I'm the focus.
And all there's that fundamental belief if a guy steps into that,
right. Yeah, that
relationship,
suddenly he's like, hey,
right. It's a sex
full of,
star,
and that's
like,
full
oh,
of
okay,
shit.
We're not really, that's not real lesbians.
That's no,
fake they're porn, like, porn lesbians.
And leave, you know. I mean, you know. So there is
you're right,
thing.
And I don't know if it's part of it is because you have been able your entire life you've had to be able to.
It's either that or not enjoy James Bond, you know?
Right. Or at anything.
Yeah, there's no other choice.
Right, so maybe you've just been able to search for all the things you can, and I have the luxury of, well, like, when something pops up, like, yeah, don't like James Bond, he bangs around with dudes. I'm going with Kirk here. I have the luxury of just moving on.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that is it. You know, maybe it definitely is could be it.
Yeah,
maybe
it's just interesting.
Maybe your Kinsey scale slid some.
Kinsey.
Pardon me, is my Kinsey showing?
Or whatever that is. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm not sure. Do you look at James Bond women and go, she is so beautiful, I would have sex with her?
There have been a few. I'll admit that.
So, I don't... I mean, I'm not saying that...
But if, for me, it's not about banging them just so much as, like, my God, I totally understand why anyone would want this person ever.
Right.
You know, like, anyone. Dead people want this woman, you know?
I can see that.
But
do you feel geeks are less... Is it because geeks are because the geek? No, I'm not saying geeks. I'm saying geek
culture,
art and culture. So is it because it's male dominated right now?
No, I would actually say there's a different. I would say geek culture right now is
boy dominated.
Well, that's the thing. I will speak specifically. I think working in the video game industry, I have a very different perspective on this than some people might. In the video game industry, you have so many geeks that have been pounded down for being less than masculine or being accused of being gay because they're not into sports or whatever, you know, that there's so many guys, as geeks out there that are trying to prove that they're not.
Yeah.
That there's actually more homophobia and more hostility from a lot of the geek culture.
Well, you just look at Halo. You know? Let's go back to Halo Reach.
Yeah. I mean,
if you go, I mean, fag is an insult. Fag is, you know,
that's not even, it's not even bad on Halo. Go to Call of Duty.
Yeah.
It's
unbearable. Yeah. Yeah. You know, but sorry, my train of thought just went out the window.
Well, you're saying in the video game community.
But I mean, if there's more, like if you go to a geeky, super geeky convention,
sure,
there is way more
cross-dressing
slash bisexual things going on there than you would. And a lot of women.
And also with the yaoi community, or however it's pronounced, within the anime society, you know, with women who write for women about men who like men. You know, I mean, that's...
It varies.
Why isn't that showing... I mean, like, again, why can there be a Will and Grace?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Not
I mean,
fiction Will and Grace.
That's what I'm saying. That is a science fiction Will and Grace, and it's for a very select population of specifically Japanese. You know, because they are women who write, they're writing fan fiction and they're also creating comic books in a sci-fi universe that are based around homosexuality.
The fact that in every major MMORPG there's a gay guild, the fact that there needs to be a gay chapter of the Star Trek Trekkie community, the fact that they need to segregate themselves off, you know, that speaks something in and of itself.
Now, is it a solidarity thing? In solidarity, there is power, and therefore we're going to do this? Or is it...
I thought so at first.
Okay.
Like, when I started getting involved with, the gay video game convention circuit, you know, like, as far as, like, you know, networking for gay video game professionals, I just thought it was a networking thing.
Right.
I didn't realize that it was actually a goddamn support system, you know?
Huh.
And it is. You know, it's sort of draining to work in an industry that kind of... hammers down at something that's sort of core to you all the time, you know, which is true of every industry. I'm not saying that the video game industry
absolutely.
Is specific to that, you know, and I'm sure it's like that for straight guys in the fashion industry, you know,
could be.
I'm sure there's a straight guy fashion networking circuit out there somewhere. <You know?
laughs> I just can't take them talking about dresses anymore. God, I'm just not gay. Why does he keep on asking?
Have, you know, we have a lot of listeners who are gay and have, you know, written us and either
figured out that we're gay-friendly, or I don't know. They seem to... Mm-hmm. And it kind of comes in the couch in the exact same format as...
As
the geek letter, which is, I am a closeted geek, and I was afraid, and now, you know, I didn't know that you guys could... It's like the exact same letter.
Yes.
So they just cross out geek with gay, almost.
Mm-hmm. Well, they actually don't even have to cross out the whole word, those last three letters.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
Well, we'll see. If you have something to say about the topic, unless you have something else to add, Don?
No, that's pretty much it.
Then please come to our forums at www.geekson.com and come to the forums and comment. Or write individually to Aaron, well, Peter isn't here, Matt, or Don at geekson.com.
Or geeks@geekson.com if you want to get to all of us.
Yes.
In addition, just going back to the topic at hand, the trevorproject.org, if you're having trouble and you're looking for a little support. And you know what? Don at geekson.com if you need to chat, you know.
Get started, you know,
I'll
if
pay
you
it want forward.
To meet other people that are like you. I mean,
who Don, listen to Geeks On? Start up a Geek On forum thread.
Yeah, stop by the forum, say hi.
Don invited me to. There was a gaming group that you guys, and I mean, they're going to allow me in, so I guess it's not exclusive.
Did you have to wear
We
a
have a couple
or?
Token straights.
Anything?
What's that? Yeah,
you know,
I don't know.
People.
No, he'll leave in a tutu. Just so you wait.
All right, but the show is not quite over.
No, we have two bits. Count them, two bits. We have a smarty librarian bit that has been burning a hole in my mailbox for months.
We love our smarty bits.
Yes, so we're
wait,
gonna.
That
what?
Came out wrong. No, yeah, that totally came out.
Well,
wrong.
With that, now we
let's do her first, real quick.
What?
Before we do the next one.
Oh,
before you announce the next one.
Okay.
In between waiting for episodes of Geeks On to come out, I've been listening to a wonderful podcast called The Gamma Quadrant, where the panel of hosts discuss the episodes of Deep Space Nine in great depth. One of the things that keeps coming up is the series of DS9 tie-in novels that continue the story beyond the finale. And it got me thinking. Tie-in novels are the red-headed stepchild of science fiction fandom. You know it, I know it, people looking to make fun of us know it. Aren't you always afraid that if you tell somebody you like sci-fi, that he or she will sneer and say, "Oh, you read Star Trek books?" No, we want to shout, "I read serious sci-fi books." And by the way, haven't you heard? Sci-fi is cool now. And then the boy or girl we are attempting to flirt with will slowly back away. But what is so wrong with tie-in novels? While they are sometimes dismissed as glorified fanfic, tie-in novels are a bit different. They hover between the complete fantasy worlds of fanfic, where Kirk and Spock declare their undying love for one another on a regular basis, and the button-down world of network television, where budget restrictions and the censor scissors often tamp down on story ideas. Tie-in novels are semi-canon, filling in backstory to minor characters like the DS9 novel A Stitch in Time, penned by Garrick himself, Andrew Robinson, or exploring tensions in major characters, like Peter David's Imzadi, which focuses on the Riker-Troy relationship. For those of us who love these characters, tie-in novels are a chance to spend more time with them, and maybe get to understand them better. They are a chance to live in the world we love for just a little while longer. The idea of authors exploring another author's creation is not a new concept. L. Frank Baum wrote only 14 books in his Oz series before Ruth Plumly Thompson took over in 1921, and there were quite a few horror writers who played in Lovecraft's Cthulhu mythos in the 20s and 30s, and not to mention all the Sherlock Holmes books not written by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. But tie-in novels as we know them got their start with 60s sci-fi, with novels for The Avengers and The Prisoner. The 1970s and 80s saw the rise of the Star Trek novel, but the tie-in novel really began to attract a wider audience in the 90s, with authors like Timothy Zahn writing for Star Wars, and Peter David for Star Trek, and a young buck named Russell T. Davies for, yes, The New Adventures of Doctor Who. Is there any shame in writing an engaging story in a universe that you didn't create? I don't think so. And certainly when I was reading Ruth Thompson's Oz series as a child, I didn't care that Baum hadn't written them himself. I just cared about Oz. And when I read Timothy Zahn's Thrawn trilogy as a teenager, I was too busy getting caught up in the story and the world building to wonder if Zahn should have spent his time building an original series. And maybe that's at the heart of why people tend to look down on tie-in novels. They celebrate the fictional worlds, not the creator. The romantic idea of a whiskey-swilling author alone in his study with a typewriter doesn't gel with the idea of tie-in fiction, because the authors writing these novels aren't lone wolves out to shake the establishment. They're contributing to something beyond themselves, a collaborative world-building for sci-fi fans who like to go deep into our obsessions. And it's about time we appreciate what they do. But before you race out and begin reading every tie-in novel you can get your hands on, I should issue a caveat. My biggest complaint about tie-in fiction is when the authors can't manage to get the voices of the characters right. The Joss Whedon properties are particularly tough, not only because his special brand of witty dialogue is notoriously difficult to copy, but because of the delicately balanced relationships on the show. Tip too far in one direction and you risk setting off a shipper war. That is why I am extremely pleased to bring you my first of two recommendations. Joss Whedon's Buffy Season 8 graphic novels. They continue Buffy's story past Season 7 and use the format for everything it's worth, doing crazy things without concern for effects budgets, bringing back characters without concern for actor schedules or ages, and just doing things that wouldn't fly on a network. My second recommendation is actually for a series of audiobooks. Doctor Who audiobooks read by David Tennant, Ten himself. The man is a very talented voice actor, and the audiobooks are just like extra episodes of Doctor Who. Beyond that, if you want to delve into some Who, Trek, or Star Wars, just go to your local library and find something that looks interesting. My mother, Mama Librarian, went through a phase where she read every Star Trek book that had a Borg on the front cover. I tend to go for the Cardassians, but then we're all different. Back to you, boys.
Yay!
Yay!
We need to do more Geeks On episodes just so that we can get her on more.
Exactly. She actually should come and just talk on the show at some point. She actually did some research for us and found us a lawyer to come and talk to us about how we talk out of our asses. About, well, you know, the Constitution is actually written on plastic. Yeah, we have a lawyer.
That'd be great. I would love to do an episode with somebody who knew they were talking about.
Yeah, I'm gonna go. Hello. You know, you're wrong. Okay. Well, we should do our other bit. Brought to us by.
Dun dun dun!
Another one of the Geeks On listeners, Joshua Pelton.
Yay! Yes.
Who created a great thread?
Who's our official welcome wagon on the forum?
Yes, he is. Yes. He,
be nice, Josh.
Be nice, Josh.
Spiny.
Josh. Yes, exactly. He's cut. Remember American Gladiators?
Yes.
Remember the Gauntlet?
Oh yeah.
Where they'd like take you through and like you had to face ice at the end of it.
Yeah,
and, you know,
much.
And like women who'd done roids and yeah. That's kind of like Josh.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
But if you survive Josh, then you are one of us.
Exactly.
One of us.
But Josh.
He started a crazy thread
where. Because Josh is an engineer.
That thread was full of awesome.
It was brilliant.
Sorry.
It was amazing. It was absolutely brilliant. He said he would calculate anything. And so he did. And people just shot questions at him, and he calculated them. And so Josh has now been kind enough to record himself and created a bit called The Calculator. And if you have questions for Josh or for Smarty at any point in time, you can send questions to Josh for him to calculate something, or you can send questions about books to Smarty for her. But let's listen to Josh.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is The Calculator. How much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood? New York State wildlife expert Richard Thomas found that a woodchuck could chuck around 35 cubic feet of dirt in the course of digging a burrow. A yard of dirt, 27 square feet, is about a ton or 74 pounds per cubic foot. This means that at a minimum, a woodchuck would probably chuck 35 times 74, 2590 pounds of wood. Depending on what sort of wood we're talking about, this could be anything from 2,590 pounds divided by 4 pounds per cubic foot for balsa is about 647.5 cubic feet to 2,590 pounds divided by 83 pounds per cubic foot for ebony is about 31.2 cubic feet of wood. This is, of course, dependent on the woodchuck, as its attention span for such tasks could vary, etc. Also, because of the phraseology of the question, almost any answer is acceptable. The woodchuck could decide to fuck off and play foosball and not chuck any wood at all. Thus, it's impossible to give an exactly answer, merely a good approximation. Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers. How many did he pick?
Firstly, part of the charm of this nursery rhyme is its nonsense. Pickled peppers are peppers which have participated in a pickling process, and as such, picking a peck of them would be a pure pipe dream. We'll assume that Peter was picking a peck of proper peppers for potential pickling. Of course, it's possible that Peter picked a peck of pickled peppers from his local produce peddler, which would then depend on how many were placed in the package. A peck is defined to be 1/4 of a bushel. Bushels are slightly tricky as units of measurement because their size varies with respect to the produce being measured. According to the University of Arkansas weights per bushel chart, there's about 28 to 30 pounds of peppers in a bushel, which would mean that Peter had picked 7 to 7.5 pounds of pickled peppers. But according to other more conservative guides, a peck of pickled peppers is 2 gallons dry weight, or about 10 to 14 pounds. A proper pepper weighs about 110 grams, or 0.24 pounds. Using the lower estimate, 7 divided by 0.24 pounds is about 29 peppers. Using the upper, more liberal estimate, 14 divided by 0.24 pounds is about 58 peppers. Thanks for listening. If you've got a calculation you want crunched, anything from the probability of extraterrestrial life to the result of a single turn in Warhammer, email it to josh@geekson.com. And remember, math is fun.
So, actually, we have a bunch of those.
Freaking love his brain.
His brain is big.
I love his brain.
Did you see how he took David Brin to task on our forums?
I did not, actually.
He took David Brin to task.
I'll have to go check that out.
He was like, David Brin, he's not so smart.
I wonder if we can get Josh and David Brin on the same episode.
I think that would maybe like be putting a humidifier and a dehumidifier in the same room.
I don't know. It might be like dividing by zero.
Could be.
I don't think they would let each other talk.
That's probably the most factual.
I don't know. I mean, I've never spoken with Josh. I kind of picture him as being very methodical and precise in his communication. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't met him personally. But David, he talks.
He talks.
That's for sure. Anyway, catch up next episode next time, guys.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll be doing
lots
some mailbag.
Mail.
TV shows, video games.
So much has gone by.
Games.
Yes.
iPhone games.
And if you have mail books. Questions, M-A-L-E or M-A-I-L, regarding this episode, send them in now, and we'll hopefully get to them before the next episodes. If they're funny, we might put them on the air.
Yeah, send them. Try to send it before Halloween. Try to send a question to us if you want.
Because we will be recording before Halloween.
Yeah, and we'll try to answer them. They don't have to be funny. They just have to be good questions.
And send us suggestions for costumes.
I'm going to be a big banana.
I want a good costume this year, and I have no ideas. Help me. Help me. Okay. It's Don. Help me.
Okay.
All right.
Don at geekson.com.
Yep.
All right, everybody. Have a good geek week.
Have a great geek week.
Bye.
Rock it out.
Geek it out.